Welcome to Talking Junk.
I'm your host, Jason Melendez.
Live now every week on Fridays.
Talking Junk.
A multitude of professionals in different aspects, different walks of life.
You have to come on and talk junk like a normal person.
Welcome to Talking Junk, coming to you live every Friday night from Facebook, YouTube, Periscope, and Twitch. How you guys doing out there tonight? It's me, Jason, and my man, Talon. We here tonight. How you doing, Talon? How you doing?
Man, you know, just keeping it going in this crazy, crazy world, you know. Hello, sunshine. Hello, junkers. Thank you for tuning in. Hopefully, we got a nice show for you. I know I've been absent the last few weeks, but that's because life's been a bit crazy.
We got a doozy tonight.
Yeah, I know. I saw we got some wonderful things talk about tonight.
Our guest tonight is going to give Elon Musk a run for his money pretty soon.
Hope so. Competition is beautiful. Yeah. Capitalism.
It sure is. We're talking Steve Favis. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, Jason. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. How you doing over there?
Doing good. A little smoky outside in Northern California, but hanging in there.
Not that good kind of smoky with everybody having their Traegers outside, putting meats and all the different deliciousness. Just, I guess I need to meet my neighbors. That good smoky.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate what's happening right now. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. I'm a CTO and CEO and founder of FAR Corporation, which stands for Favis Advanced Robotics Corporation. And what we do is we have the world's most advanced patent on humanoid robotics. The robot is full-on humanoid, close to human anatomy with synthetic parts. It's trained in a simulator at faster than real-time pace. And then that logic is exported to that AI model is exported to the actual robotic system. So it's kind of like growing an infant to adulthood in a matter of months instead of, you know, 18 years.
So it's like a Gigapet.
Gigapet.
Come on.
I haven't heard of Gigapet.
Never heard of a Gigapet?
Not a Gigapet. No, no. Is that one of those like toys like from Japan where you you?
Yeah, it was like this little thing. It's like a keychain. And it starts
Tamagotchi.
Tamagotchi.
Tamagotchi, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, except these are a little bigger than those.
a little bit more advanced than Tamagotchi.
Yeah, a little more advanced. Right, yep. They have different names.
Toys, the iRobot.
Yeah, they have different names. Gigapet, but I've heard of the other one for sure. Yeah, I'm very familiar with those.
So how did you start your career in robotics?
Yeah, so I started programming at a really, really young age. My father was handicapped, and he developed a fascination with programming when he was working, and I was about maybe 6 years old. So the recording for blind and dyslexic didn't actually give the audio books of programming books, because programming changed so quickly at the time, as of today, like today basically. So I used to read these programming books to him and help him type the programming books in as a child. I think it was around Amiga era or Amiga Basic basically. Then I started building a lot of remote control airplanes and remote control cars, and then I worked in the game industry for about 12 years. And what I figured out, yeah, exactly, yeah, I worked at Electronic Arts.
Did you work with them when they were still wonderful? When they were working with Westwood Studios and everything.
Not that far back, but it was around the Simpsons game. I think around the 360. Xbox 360, Wii.
And, that was right before they started becoming the ire.
The Wii just came out. I worked at Electronic Arts drawers, and I started my own game company after that.
Okay. So what happened?
So what happened was I realized, you know, game developers, they create worlds, and I was like, why are we training robots in real time in a real area? Why don't we just simulate it, accelerate the clock in the game, and then train the physics from there, and then we pop that out when it's working good and bring it to the actual physical system in the real world. So basically we're creating worlds or like a matrix for robots and not necessarily for people, basically.
Right. Okay. So you're kind of like putting them into the, like where he says we need guns and all those things come up. It's like you're jacking the robot into the Matrix so it can learn.
Exactly.
So it can come back into the real light world and actually act more human.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we're training them with human emotion capture, and we're training their perception and vision inside the simulator, which if you play video games, the video games look like the real world, basically. So yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's a combination of the Matrix movie and that Inception movie where they dream and they could create stuff on the fly, basically. So we could create a staircase, manipulated staircase, big stairs, long stairs, spiral staircase, without using real world resources, basically. It's all based simulation, and then we validated real world.
That's pretty cool. So what's the I mean, obviously the knowledge and the desire to know is there, but what is, for your company, the end goal with the development of these AIs and robotics? Is it to create the servants that before the revolution? Is it to help create the war bots for the Terminator revolution? Like, which dystopian robotic future are you working towards?
Yeah,
or maybe,
yeah,
hopefully not one at all. That would be my choice.
Yeah, exactly. That would be my choice too, basically. So the end game in the robots is not only
end
not
game. Only, so you're going with Ultron then, huh?
Ultron, yeah, Age of Ultron. Yeah. So yeah, the end game in the robots is basically to take away the hard physical dangerous jobs that humans do. It's not. I say this that I'm not concerned about machines replacing humans. I'm concerned about humans being treated like machines. So, it's to help humans, basically. There's a lot of catering inside of it and the training methodology. So it's not necessarily like we're letting them think and have their own behaviors. We're training them to do certain specific behaviors. But going back to the Terminator, iRobot, whatnot, these things aren't going to be self-aware or have their own motivation, or we're not going to build a lizard brain, or we shouldn't be building a lizard brain, for example. But what's going to happen is if there is AI weapons out there, which, you know, China, Russia can make, which I consider like a kill all humans scenario, kill anything that's warm or whatever. The only thing that's going to be able to combat another AI, that's our only chance of defending against a kill all human scenarios, is a human catered AI that says go, no go. You'd light this target up or you keep it. So that's what I'm working on.
Okay. Well, that's not scary. And most of the stuff that you see out there, like with not to say that what they're doing is scary, but whenever you see a video from Boston Dynamics, it's with like a 3-4 year gap, and you're like, what the fuck are they doing? That thing, they can parkour. I can't parkour. Why is a robot parkour? Why do you need it to parkour?
That's true. That's
but
right.
I understand why you would do that. Especially if you're doing two different types of AI, because I don't know a whole lot about AI, but I do know that there is the more autonomous AI, which is the more complex structure, and then there's the learned-based AI, I believe, where like it's for a specific task, and that's kind of where it's learning. It's learning to do that skill with a perfection as opposed to learning to do everything with a perfection.
Yeah. So what the reason why I'm designing this complex of a system is because I want to create one platform that does many tasks instead of one platform that does one task, basically. If you think about Turing, and if you guys seen that movie with Turing, the World War II movie where they counteracted the Enigma encryption machine with a Turing machine, he made one Turing machine or one computer that could do many different tasks instead of one program that does one task, basically. So, in the sense that we create multiple apps or programs for this one platform instead of creating one robot for every task. I mean, this madness has to end at some point. No problem.
Okay.
Now, we were talking a little off camera. This wasn't your first version of Seraphine. How did it evolve?
So I'll give you the backstory on how it was funded and how the company was started. I filed the patent for the Seraphim in 2015. It was granted in 2018. I spoke publicly for the first time in 2016 about the patent. But in the meantime, so my first patent was actually the Seraphim robotics platform. Then what happened in the meantime, we had Chinese investors that invested in a social robot called B08 or Bob the Robot. And that's pretty much what you mostly see over the internet. And then also we created a Scepter, a smart speaker platform, or smart speaker, which is like an Alexa. What happened was the government clamped in on AI regulations or AI exports to China. And we just stopped with that company, and then we just moved on to continue with the Seraphim platform, which is my original passion. It's not necessarily smart speakers or social robots, I should say. I wanted to spend my time on something that had long-lasting implications and would be extremely beneficial to humanity, basically.
Now, is this sort of what Seraphim's frame is like?
Yeah, exactly. So this is an example print for what we're using. This is just a physical 3D model of that cranium you see there. But we have a CNC machining capabilities where these craniums will be into a longer, more durable and repeatable and faster to produce cranium or endoskeleton. A skeleton that's very similar to our human anatomy, basically. This machine behind me is capable of producing those parts along with the soft muscles and stuff like that.
Okay, so the anatomy is essentially just like a human being.
Absolutely, yeah. If you're on the website, minus the organs. Yeah, exactly. You know, my patent is published. If you go to patents.google.com and type in my name, you can actually see the patent diagrams and what the initial patent we have for it. We're building a whole patent tree around that, basically. So,
oh, that's pretty innovative, because nowadays you don't see things like that. You just see a whole bunch of wires, metal frames, and the ones that do look like humans, they kind of still don't have that feel to them. They have,
yeah, absolutely like that what was the name of it? The one with that just has a chat bot. She's from the chest up, Sophia.
Yeah, she's
what you're talking about is something called the Uncanny Valley. If I use a endoskeleton and muscle structure that is too different from a human, then it's going to look, at first glance, it's going to look okay, but when it moves, it's not going to have the natural facial expressions or movements like a human does, because the underlying anatomy and the muscles are in the wrong position. So it causes that creep out effect. It's either you go nothing like a human or exactly like a human, but if you don't have that underlying skeletal structure or muscle structure, it's going to look weird, and that's called the uncanny valley.
That was supposedly a big problem when L.A. Noire came out. It was using such new technology to make everything look so real that there's certain aspects of the face that looked unreal and was really sticking out to people.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting thing that people have been trying to overcome with deep fakes as well. But I feel like it's almost an instinctual thing that you can kind of tell, but we've yet to see. Perhaps you'll be the first to figure that out.
Absolutely. Undoubtedly, the solution to the uncanny valley is having natural human anatomy and muscles that are in the same place that move in the same direction, basically. And my patent covers all that, basically. All the natural human anatomy, every single synthetic equivalent of a human body, including muscles and endoskeleton or the skeleton, basically. So we're way beyond the uncanny valley. These things should look almost exactly like humans within 5 to 6 years, basically. 2 years, we should have a model that'll walk around and actually emulate the human gait and move around autonomously, basically, to different places we pointed to.
Now, what about the face?
Yeah,
are you going to model it after people, or is it going to be just like a human, that it has different faces?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think for the first maybe 5 to 10 years, we're going to kind of do the Model T approach, where it'll have a generic face and it'll actually have the natural human anatomy still. But after 11, 12, whatever years, what we could do is we could actually create the actual endoskeleton similar to somebody else's face, for example, with similar face muscles and similar skin complexion, basically. It won't feel like a natural human skin. They will be warm like humans, though, just naturally the polymers and elastomers work, and silicon kind of work at this natural human temperature, which is a strange coincidence. But the skin and stuff like that will still feel like a silicon covering, similar to sex dolls or whatnot, basically. So.
Now, the first couple models that you're coming out with, what essentially are their functionalities going to be?
So the first two models, we're going to produce 5 prototypes within 2 years. And the emphasis isn't necessarily going to be on facial expression. but it's going to be focused on motor skills, you know, getting up, standing, walking without a tether, and fitting in natural human spaces and trained with a human motion capture system, basically. So we're focusing on literally motor skills, perception, proprioception. The speech is mostly already done already. It's just a matter of training them in a simulator after we build the actual platform. So it's kind of a chicken and egg model, basically. Or you can't simulate and train something unless it exists in the real world. So you have to build a platform and then train it, because you can't train it without the actual platform. So you have to build the model, train it. You have to have both in order for it to train properly.
Right now, as it stands, you said speech is already done.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Does it sound robotic, or is it free flowing? Because a lot of the things now aren't free flowing.
Yeah, exactly. So we're sticking with something. The preferred methodology I like using for training chatbots is I like a good sounding voice that responds at a natural human response that is something that is commonly responded to. For example, hello, hi, that's going to be a natural sounding human voice. But if it's going to have to improv or say things that are not previously recorded or prepared, then it will go to a voice very similar to it, to the natural we choose, basically, which would probably be a female voice.
And is the first model is going to be female, or is it going to be male and female preference?
The first model is going to be kind of androgynous, but most likely a female voice.
And that's because I believe I've seen that studies that female voices people react to and better than male.
Yeah,
voices.
Yeah. There's something about the feminine voice that people feel less threatened to, and even kids like. I used to teach in an after school program, and for some reason the children responded more to the female teachers. So there's something innate in us that feels more comfortable around females for some reason. So
that matronly vibe, I guess.
Say it again.
The matronly vibe they can give off, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So there's something a little bit more pleasing to all genders and ages to a female voice, I believe, anyway. So.
Of course, I'm going to ask a question. I promise you, it's only ever busy when I'm trying to do this show. I was watching Jurassic Park before this. Nothing was happening.
Yeah, it happens, but I'm pretty sure he'll come back on with his question in a second. Did you have to record somebody's voice to use, or did you fully customize her voice?
So there's lots of options for voice right now. One of them is to actually just physically record the voice for common responses. The second part is you can actually deep learn the actual voice and what it sounds like after a certain amount of recording. So there's so many natural sounding human voice solutions right now. It doesn't matter what we use. I mean, that's minuscule in comparison to what we're doing. So most likely, the approach I'll use is a voice I like a female radio voice, a strong female radio voice that is... will basically be deep learned and then emulated in the long run, basically. So I already have my voice talent. It's probably similar to the Scepter speaker. If you see the Scepter trailers or previews, I'll probably use the same talent. I like that voice.
Yeah, I've seen one of them. Let me see if I can pull it up again before his phone rings. Let him answer, ask his question, and I'll pull it up.
It slipped my mind because my entire focus changed to why they were calling, so I kind of lost my train of thought. I apologize. Should come back to me, though. But I'm generally just kind of interested in where your vision for robotics is going. I understand that you want to help people out and help mitigate the more dangerous jobs and not replace jobs. But it is a difficulty to where there are a lot of jobs that people fulfill that are just dangerous by nature. So just because you have that humanitarian aspect, are you trying to kind of create a functional transition away from the more dangerous jobs of society and allow machines to do that? Or do you really have kind of an ultimatum goal like that? I know it's very difficult, but this is also just generally a very difficult thing to try and do. And as a opposition to Tesla, not that I hate Tesla, it's just good to have competition. It makes things better for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, the end game here is to relieve people from hard, dangerous, difficult jobs, number one. whether that's agriculture, manufacturing, whatever factory work, whatever is hard and dangerous. Second is also to produce a buffer or a counter for other rogue AIs that may approach us in the kinetic world too. So that's a huge objective, basically. But again, there will always be human catering on this thing. There will always be a human that says, this is a dangerous target. This is not a dangerous target. Go, no go. So I always want to have that human loop in there, basically. That's part of the responsibility of this, as with any other weapon, firearm, or, for example, nukes, for example. It's not like a biological weapon that can, you know, take out the world and, you know, and stop the world for a while. So,
right. So this wasn't my original question, but are Isaac Asimov's laws as important once you get to deep learning as we would like them to be, or do they kind of start to disintegrate once you get more complicated?
I think Isaac Asimov's laws are so high level that there's many layers of that have to go on before that. And the training on deep learning and stuff like that is going to have to be perpetually saying, is this person at risk? Is this person at risk? Is this person at risk? Most likely, if it's working in an office where people are doing computer work, there's a low risk there. So we don't need to add that loop. So these levels of abstraction that Isaac Asimov created, that's ingrained in our collective consciousness, I think they're so high level, we don't really need to worry about that. If it is a protection robot or security robot, then we will train it accordingly, and that will protect human life and save human life if necessary. But again, it's an unnecessary loop. If I'm hypervigilant right now and I'm worried about an anvil falling on me, then that's going to take up some of my resources. I'm not worried about an anvil falling on me, so I don't need to put that in the loop.
Okay.
But construction workers are.
That's true. That's
well,
right.
That's why they have hard hats. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
There's
yeah.
no way. Haven't you learned from Wile E. Coyote?
That's fine. Fine.
It doesn't work, though. It's not going to work on us.
well, yes, I'll give you that point. It's not going to work on any of us, but Wile E., he comes back every day.
We'll talk about a funny story about Wile E. Coyote with our topic next week. But, yeah, on the break room, not on, which is kind of crazy now that I notice it, Todd.
On Iceman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. But now you made me lose my train of thought.
I apologize. I'm being an emotional vampire. I think that's what they call it in From the Shadows.
Now, so one of the, like you just said, now if it was security, so it could potentially be Secret Service one day.
Absolutely, yes.
Or
that'd be more like an endgame, I would imagine.
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
So it could go from a bouncer to Secret Service, anything along that range.
Absolutely. So it could farm strawberries in the morning. The program updated with appropriate security procedures, and it could do Secret Service.
Body now, what?
The same platform.
The same bot.
Same robot. The program and update, or the program just needs to be changed in the actual machine.
So, regarding wanting familiarity in the robots, because obviously humans are more likely to interact with things that don't put them off. I understand that. But is there a concern at all for robotics getting to the point that they are nigh seamless? And unless you know, there's no way for you to know. Because I'm not sure if you're familiar with Ghost in the Shell, but that kind of scenario comes to mind where there are advanced cybernetics going on, but unless you know about it, and they let you know about it, you're going to have no clue. And I imagine things like that for like just spies and stuff like that. Spycraft is an interesting conversation.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm familiar with Ghost in the Shell integration on that show of a human brain with a synthetic or cybernetic body or whatnot. I prefer keeping the silicon separate from biology as much as I can. We still don't fully understand biology. Everybody's different. DNA is not really fully decoded. Brains can't build a brain. The best neurosurgeon, neurologist can't completely repair a brain to where it was before an accident or incident. We don't really know how they work. So I want to keep I want to keep the copper separate from the biology for as long as we can. But yeah, I think that there will be a point where we can build and grow a brain. Basically, I think that's going to happen in the future. Maybe not my lifetime or our lifetimes, but you know, there is opportunities when we do get there. I don't want to be on the alpha test for that, but there is opportunity. There is opportunities probably to create superhumans or super beings that can maybe possibly live longer than humans and give some superpowers like Ghost in the Shell. You want to do that? You want to do the alpha test for that?
Yeah, I'm definitely not being an alpha test for that. Though I might consider alpha testing for like cybernetics. Is that something that your company is going to be looking into as well, like limb replacement that has more complete functionality? Is that something you're currently working on or kind of down
the pipeline? Yeah, absolutely. The patents that I filed are related to a lot of stuff that can be done. I can't talk about them right now, but they're going to help people significantly. They're going to help people a lot with synthetic parts that, for example, if you lost a limb or something like that. So I have more stuff in the mix, basically. They're going to help people a lot. So this is a really, really good company. A lot of people's lives will be changed for the better with what we're making.
Awesome. Because if I had to choose one, I would prefer kind of a Deus Ex situation. Things feel a little more cool, a little more open for possibilities, you know.
Now, you said kind of briefly that it would kind of assess the danger factor and let you know if you're in danger or not, I guess, in the workplace. Now, does it have the capability to be maybe like a nurse, like Baymax, for instance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've been talking to HHS regarding risky scenarios, what they call it, suburni or chemical, biological, radioactive, or nuclear, basically, where it can clean up enter dangerous sites like Ebola or whatnot. The Ebola, for example, is an extremely, extremely dangerous, highly contagious, very, very dangerous virus, basically. And the nurses and staff that have to deal with it have incredibly hard work working in these facilities. And this type of a humanoid would actually help the person inside without getting contaminated or spreading contamination to protect human lives and stuff like that.
So it's very, very beneficial for us in either aspect, wherever you want to put this bot, it's going to benefit us in every step of the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100% guarantee that.
Now, how can you kind of combat the superstition that they're going to start taking human jobs?
Yeah, exactly. So again, we're talking about jobs that, I want to say dehumanize people. That's the number one spot, basically. The second spot is actually the training of these robots. So somebody who's doing these current occupations can also train the robot to do the tasks that they are doing that is dangerous, dehumanizing, painful, repetitive, backbreaking, or whatever you name it. These risky jobs, there's still opportunities to train them. There's opportunities to maintain them and handle them. Also, so it's kind of like your PC now. It gives you a lot more power, but you still control the PC. The PC normally doesn't do things you don't want it to do. So I want to emphasize the fact that people will not be pets to my systems, but my systems will be pets to people, basically. So
will they be trained to fight?
It's a plausible scenario. If we do need more human resources or fighting power or combat power, I would much rather sacrifice bots rather than Marines, military, any of our protectors, including law enforcement.
Most definitely. So now we're talking, we're going from Rock'em Sock'em robots fighting all the way to RoboCop.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Yeah, except there's no human inside of it. They have no feelings. There's the biology. They don't have a family or anything. So,
and they won't have the capability to learn from their mistakes.
No, they will have the capability to learn from other mistakes. For example, if one gets hit by an anvil, the physical system may be destroyed, but it will say, "Okay, let's not stand under an anvil." After it's rebuilt, when that logic is pushed up.
So. In danger of quoting Marvel too much in this episode, it's like when Ultron said, I'm already there. His consciousness would transfer to the mainframe and it will distribute it to all the other bots so they would know not to walk under this and have the anvil fall on them.
Absolutely, for sure. That's the way it works. Okay. It's kind of like the soul collective. The soul never dies.
So a hive mind, basically.
In a sense, I want to say hive mind in the sense that hive mind in the sense that what a bot learns before it gets crushed, destroyed, burnt, whatever, that is put up into the collective, into its app store or soul area, and that is relearned and trained to avoid the certain situation it has made in a mistake or whatever, basically. So
now I did pull up your video, so for the people who are listening to this or going to be listening to this on Spotify and wherever you listen to your podcast, I apologize, but be sure to go to his website, far-corp.com, and watch this video for yourself. But for you guys that are watching live, we're going to play the video for you now.
But you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Oh, that was just a short video. I thought I put a long one.
Yeah, I have a longer one behind me. I think that's the one that's playing in a loop behind me right now. So.
Ah, okay. Now, you mentioned one with a voice. Where can I find that one?
Okay, so the voice that I like, this is my favorite voice talent. If you go to, Scepter, Scepter, and you talk and you look at those videos, that's the voice I like. That's my favorite voice talent, basically. And I plan on using that voice for Seraphim. Let me see here. If you made a link, you?
I think I got it right. I got the Kickstarter right here.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, that Kickstarter got completely wrecked by the trade war, basically. So we had to stop due to Department of Commerce regulations. Yeah, you can play that video. That's kind of a similar voice to what we're using, basically. So that's my favorite voice talent right there.
Hello, I am Scepter. Nice to meet you. What can a scepter do for you? View scepter from any side with a full 360 wraparound display. Scepter does full room 360 video conferencing so you can see everyone in the room or meeting. Play your favorite music with high quality room filling speakers and see some amazing music visualizers. Like a genie in a bottle, Scepter responds to your voice and obeys your commands. Commands aren't the only thing Scepter is built for. If you're bored, you can chat with the Scepter. Scepter is designed for conversation, not just utility. Scepter isn't just a one-personality chatterbox. You can switch voices and personalities to whatever the Scepter community makes. Personalities are only limited by how many people make them. Educational, comedic, historic, or potentially a celebrity or movie character. The possibilities are endless. Maybe you want to make a voice or personality? Everyone can upload their own chatbot personality to the Scepter App Store. Do you like playing games? Well, so do I. Play with your friends and family on all sides. Scepter is made for you.
Awesome voice.
It's a great voice, isn't it?
It is.
It's a fantastic voice. Yeah, that'll probably be the first voice and the main voice for Seraphim. So
now, will there be chance to upgrade the voice just like with Scepter?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not just one voice. I mean, we could have any voice we want. We could have your voice. We could have a celebrity voice.
Hot dog! Yeah, you can do my voice any day.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. Exactly. That's right. Any voice, it doesn't matter. It could have any language too, basically. So it's not just one voice, one voice, one language. It's multiple languages, any voice basically. So.
And these add-ons, they'll be just what add-ons are right now, and they'll be priced at a base price and eventually go up.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. We're looking at maybe, I don't want to say that these are going to be exact prices, but we're probably looking at maybe 40 to 50,000 to, 70 to 100,000 a robot, basically. They should have a pretty good durable life of 5 years. If they're doing heavy intensive work like firefighting, digging ditches and stuff like that, maybe less, 2 to 3 years, but we'll try to increase the longevity over time as we do more advanced, more mature artificial muscles and stuff.
Is there anything that you may be able to show us?
Yeah, I can't show too much right now, but the simulation aspect is working great. Let me see here. I can't show too much right now. I'm not allowed to, but I think within 6 months, I think we should have pretty much a torso built. We formulated the muscle. The muscle's working great. It's very strong, very durable, and it's just a matter of us cutting the primary parts in aluminum and molding the muscle. So we're almost there. 6 months. We literally just acquired the CNC maybe about a month and a half or two ago. So I'm having to become a programmer to machinist in the shortest time possible, which is working out okay. So
you're writing your symphony right now.
That's true. That's right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it all starts at the computer. When you build a good computer model, what happens is you just cut the right part, program the cam, and the part comes out. We'll make molds to CNC, and we're also going to make the cranium and stuff like that in aluminum, basically. So this is one of the parts. I started with the cranium because it's one of the hardest parts to make. Cranium and pelvis is the hardest, but everything else is so much easier. So,
I might have missed this while I was on my little call excursion there, but regarding the actual structure of the robots, are you trying to either initially or over time mimic the actual physiology of the human anatomy as much as possible in order to gain that natural movement? Or are you trying to kind of not have what you need to, like not necessarily have all those capillaries and blood vessel things because you don't really need blood, but perhaps you have your pneumatic systems or anything like that where you need fluids to go through, so you kind of mimic that for the body? Or even just the muscle fibers, are you kind of developing with the fiber system in them, or just kind of to function as a muscle would?
What you think?
What level of physiology are you getting to?
Yeah. Don't worry about that. I mean, most of the stuff is public in my patent. If you go to patents.google.com and you type in my name, you can see the actual the system that's publicly available as far as patented patent protection. But for the most part, I don't like mixing silicon with a biology. I just think it's a bad recipe. I hear about people making, oh, we made a synthetic muscle, but dude, what's gonna happen when that meat turns into like a rotted meat? Cells don't live forever, man. It's gonna stink. It's gonna be like a dead animal. Who wants that around, man? It's gross.
Now speaking about animal, are you thinking about going a whole nother way once it's a success? And are you thinking about maybe companionship bots, maybe in the form of animals, or maybe another model of human, a child, maybe?
You know what,
a red light working human.
Yeah, exactly. Those have been brought up, but actually the red light district working human, what you're saying, right?
Yes. That's not what I was saying.
No, I think he was talking about like pets and dogs and such.
Pets, dogs,
yeah,
kids,
exactly.
You know but what I mean?
If you think about it, as far as a red light district working human, it does solve the human trafficking problem, right? So there's huge benefits.
Not really, because at the price of a house, I don't think we're going to have it.
This is why you don't get alpha models. You always don't put out you never get the first like technology. You wait 9 months or so for them to get the upgrade one, and then you're good.
But yeah, yes.
So we want them to get the Seraphim as soon as it hits the market.
Yeah. So going back to what we can make and what we can't make. You know what? Nobody knows this, but man, we can make dinosaurs. We can make whales. We can make dolphins. We can even make a dragon if we want, basically. So as long as we have that training system and we have the a large enough frame and large enough manufacturing capacity, the sky's the limit. We can make dragons. We can have a real Jurassic Park, basically.
Wow.
So you could theoretically, just from the program itself, if somebody made, say, just extremely realistic puppets or something like that, you could upload that software into it and it could act like it's, say, an alien from the data that it's streamed from and look so much more real than a CG does. Because something that I've noticed is that the mixture of or actual special effects and then the CGI special effects really is what can bring you in there, as opposed to relying on one or the other. And I think the one thing that's kind of missing it is that AI that makes it actually feel like a unique character as opposed to a tool.
Yeah, actually, you make some interesting points. There was a certain charm in the original Star Wars series with the puppets, like the original Yoda, right? Instead of the CG version.
Jim Henson just had that.
And then also Jabba.
Thing about
exactly. There's something really, really fun to watch a actual puppet instead of a CG one. There's a little more, and you can do real-time interaction too. But yeah, no, you know, anything's possible with the simulation technology. We can make anything that was natural or whatever. So,
well, we want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and just bringing Seraphim to us. It's been amazing. It's been mind-blowing, and we can't wait to see it on the market. We do, however, want to try to ask that once you get that torso built, you come back on.
I guarantee it. Yeah, once we get that torso built, you guys will be one of the first to see it, okay?
Sounds good. We want to also have you on an episode of The Break Room. Kind of chill out. Maybe we'll get it themed to Killer Robots.
Okay, that's fine.
Speaking of, join us tomorrow night. We'll be in the break room, same time, same break room station. We're going to be talking about how do you know that all your memories are real? Or is your mind just playing tricks on you? But thank you, Steve, very much for coming back on. Well, for coming on, excuse me. We got to keep in contact.
Yes, thank you, sir.
And try to get you back on in the future.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. Really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun, okay?
Thank you, man.
Before you go, are you guys public right now, or do I need to watch out for that?
Actually, it's a really good question. We are just finishing Series A round pretty soon here, and then we'll raise more capital after that. But if you're interested in investing, the website is far-corp.com. Once again, that website is far-corp.com. You can contact me through that website. This is now a very hot area now that Elon Musk has entered it, basically. So very, very hot area now. So
definitely something to look into. I may not have that investment capital now, but I would still put my nose on what may be.
For sure.
And we'll throw that up there. Did I get that right? No, I put far. Is it far? Yeah, it's far, right? Far.
Yeah, far-corp, far-corp.com. That's correct, yes.
All right.
Stands for Favis Advanced Robotics Corporation. So,
okay.
Mr. CTO, thank you again. We got to have you on. And I know you're a busy man. You got to get back to what you do best. So, again, thank you very much for coming on. Junkers, join us tomorrow night in the break room. We'll blow your mind again.
Welcome to Talking Junk.
I'm your host, Jason Melendez.